And we actually have to say, for the benefit of this location report and the dear listener, as we always like to ensure that all our sponsors are duly acknowledged, that even the battery power has actually been provided for the following interview. We're referring, of course, to the legal legend that is Charles Ather. We're reporting live from the Ather & Co offices. Charles, good to see you as ever.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's good to see you too.
And thank you for the batteries.
Now, you're very welcome.
Moving on. The 2010 year particularly was one in which we actually looked at how capturing of insurance details and selling on of insurance details was actually operating. It's something you've been setting up a campaign at. We've been running this campaign, certainly on Southside Broadcasting. First of all, for the benefit of people who aren't aware about this, can you just explain what this whole issue relates to?
Yeah, third-party capture, it's a situation where if you have a road traffic accident, you will ring your insurers, and you should ring your insurers because it's their job to fix your car, for one thing. You'll need to make sure you can get to work in the morning, you'll need to get your kids to school and whatever. So you ring your insurers and you tell them about the accident. The first or the second thing they will do is ask you if you've suffered an injury, and they will then persuade you, and they can be very persuasive, and they tell a lot of, well, lies, basically, about what solicitors like us will do and how much it'll cost and everything else. The purpose of that is to capture your details. They need your name, address, registration number, all that sort of thing. They will then sell you to one of their panel solicitors, and we call it third-party capture. Basically, your details are captured and sold to one of their panel solicitors, who will pay up to £800 just for your details in order to run your claim. The problem about that, and there are several problems, but the major problem is that I think there's a big conflict of interest, because what it means is that the insurance company who is paying your claim is very often the same insurer that you are now, or has instructed solicitors, who are now acting on your behalf. So there's a big conflict of interest there. The same insurer is paying your claim, and that insurer has sold your claim to a firm of solicitors who will say, and they may well be right, but they will say that they are acting in your best interests. But I don't see how they can be acting in your best interests when that would involve going against the insurance company for whom they rely on all their work. It's just a classic conflict of interest to my mind.
Certainly sounds as though when you're seeking out insurers, or not insurers, but also solicitors, caveat emptor is very much something to be still borne in mind. And something that you've raised in terms of that whole setup is that you need to be very careful, the listener needs to be very careful about where they actually choose to effectively say, okay, fine, we'll actually just settle this insurance claim as it stands.
Well, yes, but what happens is that the insurer, the firm of solicitors to whom you are sold, will invariably be out of town. It'll probably be in another part of the country. The difficulty is, because they pay so much to get your work, they cannot afford to have it dealt with by certainly a qualified solicitor, and often anybody who has any proper legal qualifications anyway. So you very often find yourself dealt with by what they call a file handler, who could frankly be anything.
Call centre operative.
Exactly. A lot of these people work from training manuals. They work from almost sort of pre-scripted manuals where you ring them, you'll ask a question, they'll have to look that up and they'll give the answer. They're not qualified solicitors, and many of them don't even have any legal qualifications.
That's the challenge. How has the situation been developing over the last year? Is there a sign, are there signs that people are being aware of this, that effectively this very laudable campaign that has been running for the last year or so is actually having an impact?
It is beginning to have an impact. I'm pleased to say that. You know, we are starting to find that clients are becoming a lot more sophisticated and a lot more savvy. And when they get this hard sell from their insurance companies, they don't always now immediately succumb to it and say, oh yes, you know, we're happy to be dealt with by whoever you want to be dealt with. They're now developing a mind of their own, and they're becoming a little bit more educated, if I can put it that way, in that they know they do have a choice and they can instruct, you know, a firm of solicitors locally who they trust to act only for them. And that's the important thing. You need to find a firm of solicitors who's actually acting for you and not for anybody else.
We were talking recently as part of our legal features with Alison Robinson, who's an Australian solicitor, legal bard, actually now working for the Legal Ombudsman, which of course came into play back in October, I think, last year, in terms of the go-to place if there are issues with respect to solicitors and companies. Clearly that doesn't apply to Ather & Co, etc. But in terms of the Legal Ombudsman, do you think that's something which, again, is good in general for the law services in Britain?
I don't know. It's not actually called the Ombudsman anymore. It's been replaced now by, I think it's called the Legal Services Commission. Solicitors are regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority, who are a fairly tough bunch. And you can only go to the Legal Services Commission or the Legal Ombudsman if you're not satisfied with the way any complaint against any solicitor has been dealt with by the SRA. And the SRA are, well, certainly have a reputation amongst the profession as being fairly client-orientated. And if you don't get what you want out of them, it's probably unlikely that you're going to get much joy out of the Legal Services Commission or the Ombudsman, who basically...
Continued with that point of view. So I just hope that's not the Legal Ombudsman who's actually online at present, because we're going to have to actually sort of adjust that particular side of things. Moving on, Charles, I mean, again... The one thing about the legal profession is it's constantly evolving. We hear a great deal about, obviously, it's built on precedent, various other things. In the time you've actually been in the legal profession, which I'm sure is you know, a reasonable length of time, but obviously, well, a few years, shall we say.
Yeah, I've been a solicitor for somebody around him. I thought it was 20 years, but it's now actually nearer 25. So,
well, let's say we're coming up to Silver Jubilee time. Have there been sort of progressions in which you've felt, yes, actually there's definite progress been made here, or sometimes do you actually feel so frustrated you just want to sort of say, what are we doing here?
Well, we just deal with personal injury and accident claims, and there has been a lot of progress in the development of the law. People say, oh, we've now got this dreadful health and safety culture and we must do something about it. What they don't understand is you can't actually do anything about it, because it all comes from Brussels. And, you know, if you want to do anything about it, then we've got to get out of the European community and we've got to stop accepting what we're told by Brussels. I don't actually think it's a bad thing that we have all this health and safety legislation. I think in some areas it has gone too far. But generally speaking, it puts the onus on an employer at work that if you have an accident, unless you've really done something stupid or you've really contributed to yourself, the law is almost that it's the employer's fault. He's got such a high duty of care to look after his workers and to make sure they don't injure themselves that almost we've got to a stage where if you have an accident, it's almost always the employer's fault for some reason or other, subject of course to what we call contributory negligence, which is where you do get deductions, sometimes significant deductions, where the accident is plainly, you've plainly contributed to it to a greater or lesser extent.
A lot of our students who study law at the University of Lincoln often go in with a notion that it's going to be just like the law and order campaigns and a whole variety of other bits and pieces. Is it true to say that there's still an amount of glamour in the legal profession, or is there a times where you turn around and say, well, obviously there is a certain amount of glamour, but only in certain circumstances?
No, I think that's a bit of a myth that's now largely gone. I don't think the public, certainly students, regard solicitors in any sort of awe anymore. My father used to tell me that there was a time when clients would go home from work, go and get changed and come and see him in his suit. Well, that doesn't happen now.
I'm doing no Charles. I put on almost a suit today. I just left the jacket in the car because it was a bit brisk.
Well, the point I'm making is that there's much less sort of respect for solicitors per se. People don't think just because you're a solicitor, you must somehow be any different or any special, any degree, you know, more special than they are. And I think that's a good thing, really. We're at the end of the day, we're pretty much businessmen like most other people.
I was going to suggest that obviously respect now goes to school teachers, academics, and indeed doctors, clearly.
Yeah, well, I think solicitors are treated with about as much respect these days as estate agents. I think we're just about one up from them.
Well, I was going to say, it could be more challenging. You could actually go down the line of journalism.
Well, we're slightly higher perhaps than journalists or members of parliament, but not by much, I don't think.
Well, that's an interesting point to actually begin to draw this little piece so close. I mean, just want to describe our surroundings here. Is this the actual boardroom of Ather & Co?
It is, yes. This is I suppose you could call this the boardroom, yes.
Previously, I know when we've interviewed you at work, so to speak, it's been a case of we looked at the Dalek on the desk, etc., various other factors doing that. So it's a nice sort of area here in which I see that new technology is there, together with, of course, the ubiquitous TV and video.
Ah, yes, that's to view normally DVDs that are sent to us by the defendants who are trying to claim that our clients are perhaps not as badly injured as they think they are, or the accident didn't happen quite in the way they say it did. But yes, we do need to have this technology, because it's happening an awful lot, in that a lot of clients, particularly in big claims, the insurers will now have them investigated, have them followed, videoed, and all sorts of other things.
As far as I recall, the website is athers.co.uk.
That's right, www.athers.uk.
and allowing for contact details via telephone. Do we actually have a number that people can call as well?
Yeah, it's 01642 222 575. That's 01642 222 575.